And now, the thrilling continuation of the SML podcast.
Scold us if we're too quiet.
Speak up.
You've got your morning coffee. I have my 3 a.m. soda, and I think Pappy's rocking some midnight Monster energy.
No, God, no. I'm rocking the Fresca. If I drink a Monster now, I'm fucked. It'll be Thursday before I remember to blink again.
As long as you can hear us fine, we're good.
Yeah, I'm good, Pappy. You good?
Yeah, I'm good. Well, you're the one recording, so you're the one that matters.
Oh, yeah. I should pay attention to that.
Feel important.
I'm never important. Let's not kid ourselves. What's up, everyone? This is Joe.
I'm Pappy.
And this is episode 167 of the SML podcast. Strange enough, it's our only episode this week as we're going on vacation.
Yay.
So why not celebrate our vacation in style by welcoming two of the wonderful people of Radiation Burn onto the show? How are you two doing?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Oh, I was going for awkward silence. Oh, you ruined it there.
Sorry.
Hey, if you want awkward silence, we can do awkward silence.
No, we're both good, thanks.
There's the awkward silence.
It's what they wanted. So anyway, tell us a bit about who you are and what you do.
No, I'm a human. I breathe. I don't
believe you.
No, we're Radiation Burn. We're a small games company in the middle of the UK. Very small games company. It's mostly just the two of us who you're talking to, so you've got all of it. We have another guy who comes in who swears a lot, who would be better for just swearing all the time.
Always fun.
All we focus on doing really is something a bit different, which is why a lot of people hate our games with a passion. A lot of people love them too, but there are a few that just go, "What is going on? I don't know."
Marmite.
Get it away from me.
Well, no. Joe and I spent some time with your latest game, and I figured it out pretty easy. The whole game wants me to die, and my goal is not.
Yeah, that's been my experience as well, is this game has taught me that I am bad at games.
Welcome to my world, Joe.
It's different for me. I'm not used to this.
This one's different for pretty much everyone. It's the normal thing. Some people will get into it. And, I mean, the best examples we've had are, there was a little 8-year-old girl who just picked it up like that, just straight away, and said, "No, I'm not going," when her dad told her she had to go at EGX, which is... big gaming festival, kind of like your E3, I suppose, but over in the UK, a bit smaller than that. But yeah, there's this little 8-year-old girl who got it fine, but there's plenty of like fully grown men just can't handle it at all. They get an hour in and they just freak out, go, "I have no idea what's going on," and then walk into a hole and die.
I guess we should mention the name of the game that we're talking about.
Yeah, we probably should. That's kind of helpful. You are the wonderful folks behind The Living Dungeon on the Xbox One and Steam. What all is it on right now?
It's on Xbox One and Steam right now. Right. Probably going on to PS4 in the relatively near future.
Good to hear. For the people who don't know what this game is, never heard of it, give us the sales pitch. Tell us about the game, what it is, why it is so brutally evil and sadistic.
Well, I'd pitch it in a different way, but most people who play it who really enjoy it say it's like a turn-based version of Dark Souls. That's it. You just die all the time. But eventually, what it is, it's a tabletop board game. But you don't have to clean up afterwards. You've got your 5 dice. You roll your 5 dice. But instead of being hits and misses, those are 5 actions you can perform. So it might be jumps or dodges or rotate or flip a board piece. And the whole idea is you've got 2 minutes to figure out how you can use those to stay alive and kill other players. I imagine you guys were you guys just playing the single player, or did you get a chance to play multiplayer at all?
Well, I've only played single player myself because I have a wife who works all the time and a roommate who is never home because he plays in a band. So it's just me alone.
What about the cat?
The whole opposable thumbs thing. It's a downer.
Excuses.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've only
That's all it is. No, the multiplayer is where the game really is. That's what it's all about. Getting a couple of your friends around and just slaughtering them all afternoon. That's really where the core of the game is.
I'm going to have to try that next time I get over to Joe's place.
Yeah, if you like playing board games with your friends, it's ideal. Great afternoon. Don't have to tidy up afterwards.
Well, Pappy, you have game nights out there. You should force some people to learn what a video game is.
Well, I'll have to get them over here. We usually play at a more people-friendly location that's not a one bedroom with one piece of furniture.
Oh, bitch. Gee. How many excuses do you have?
My living room table is actually a plastic folding picnic table.
Classy.
Yeah, no, I am all class.
He's all about practicality. He's a military boy.
Yeah, no, actually, because I just had a board game night the other day, and it was a lot of fun. I always had people over here for D&D, and I think they're the right crowd that I need to get them over here to try the game out, because the concept and theories came to me pretty easy. It's just my experience with it is you got to do the right thing at the right time. If you turn it the wrong way or waste a move, you're done. It'll take you forever to get back to where you wanted to be because, oh, no, I flipped that in the wrong direction. Well, guess I got to wait for that person's turn to come back around and get the right die roll. Yeah. In my defense, I only died a lot, not all the time.
That's pretty normal.
Yeah. It's funny. Unfortunately, I didn't have the time to put a whole lot into it, but I'm enjoying it. Because the way your game's laid out, I don't feel like I'm being laughed at by the game when I die. It's just, oh, here's the learning curve.
I feel That's like okay. The game's laughing at me. Then again, I think everyone's laughing at me.
Well, I think by naming the dungeon the DM, the Dungeon Master, it immediately, went to my sense of, oh, yeah, no, when I play D&D, the DM's job is to murder me. So I'm used to this. I've been playing D&D for over 20 years.
This is a lot about your D&D sessions. Just kill you.
It's the same concept. They're not trying to actively murder you, but if you do something stupid, you pay for it. If I walk into a hole without, that die movement that allows me to jump it, I die. It's my fault. I should have known better.
Yeah, it's like that a lot, actually. A lot of people, when they first start playing it, they think it's actually a lot to do with luck, but it works out. It's only about a third to do with luck because you've got all your rerolls and your ability to plan ahead. There's nowhere near as much luck as people think there is, usually, especially in the single-player game. You can go – the craziest mode is probably random assassination because there's quite a few multiplayer modes, which is – it just changes who you're supposed to kill every so often, so that likes to mess things up a bit. We actually recorded – ourselves playing that at one point. It's just fun. It just changes. You go and you go, oh, I'll jump on the board and kill someone, and someone else kills someone, and then basically the rules change, and you could be getting chased after by the guy you were just going after.
Do you have the video that uploaded anywhere?
Yeah, we put it on YouTube, on our Radiation Burn YouTube channel.
So if anyone's listening and wants to see the developers murder each other...
Yeah.
We've got a couple of videos up there. We've done escape mode, random assassination. We do a couple of story missions as well.
It was an incredibly civilized escape mode.
Yeah.
We kept on each side of the board and just tried to get across. It was very, very nice. Yeah.
Polite Brits.
Not what you'll expect when you're playing with your friends.
No. The last time we saw it, it took them, I don't know, half an hour of playing, and they were all still on the first tile. They hadn't got anywhere yet.
Wow.
All stuck at the start, just killing each other, and then someone put loads of monsters on the first tiles as well, so it just got crowded. No one was getting anywhere at all.
Oh my lord.
I do like when you mentioned, though, the planning ahead. I didn't have a problem with getting... I haven't been killed by a single monster yet, because I'm always like, okay, if I kill this one off and move here, I'm good till my next turn. So I've been able to plan ahead that far so far. It's just playing with the tiles, replacing parts of the maps, moving things around. That's where I'm like, okay, I got to get better at this because I'm just handicapping myself.
Yeah, when we play the multiplayer and you are trying to plan ahead with the dice you've got on the cards, but then, of course, you've got somebody else who comes along and just screws everything up. You weren't meant to flip that. You weren't meant to rotate that.
Yeah, or that's...
You can set the DM to have biases as well, which is quite funny. Sometimes it doesn't matter too much, but in some game modes it's very important that you can say it. So if there's someone you don't like, for example, I heard there's a guy, Joe, that he's a bit of an arse. So
yeah,
if you set the DM to just pick on him the entire game.
Oh, that's great.
It's good if someone's played it before, but other people haven't. You can just say, hey, have the DM pick on that person the whole time.
Or if everyone's played it except one person when they're not looking.
Hey, new people, guess what? You're screwed.
Well, if you want to do that, you just go to the DM and kill them all instead. Just mess with everyone.
I have noticed that in the game, shadows are complete assholes.
Yep.
Not a fan of shadows. I have murdered one, though, so that was fun. But the win-loss ratio is significantly on their side.
You got to be careful which character you use. There's quite a few levels where the bonus objective is actually to kill some shadows. One of them right at the end, you've got to kill three shadows, and you don't have any combat characters. So it's a challenge for someone.
How the hell? How is that supposed to be done?
A lot of flipping.
There are a couple of other avatars on the board, so a good way to do it is to try and put them into the shadows, because that gets rid of the shadow as well.
Man.
Tactics.
That's evil. Yeah. You guys are evil. Terrible,
it's
evil.
All about.
I like it. That's the whole point. And I appreciate that.
And then I have noticed that a lot of my failures in the game, if I can't directly blame the dice rolls or the shadows, it's usually me screwing up something completely stupid that I shouldn't have. Like, let me try moving here. Oops, I moved into a pit instead. And it makes me really wish that there was some kind of a oops undo, because I didn't mean to do that in the game.
We thought about that one for a long time, and they said, no, let them suffer.
Making it nearly all the way through a stage and then accidentally walking the wrong direction next to an enemy and getting killed right by the exit. That's that hurts.
that hurts.
The soul, it hurts so much.
Yeah, see, my problem is the opposite. When I handicap myself, it's right at the beginning. So it's like, oh, crap, I just moved everything to where I'm pretty much stuck walking in circles for the next three turns until I fix it.
Yeah, if you don't have a mechanical character, you can get trapped in a hole very easily. You end up going into a dead end and not knowing what to do because you're surrounded by darkness and sentinels and monsters everywhere. Now, here's Joe saying he wants to blame the dice. Numbers-wise, it's probably about 1 in 27 times you can really just blame the dice. That's just for some maths there, statistically.
Well, it doesn't mean the dice are at fault. I just need something to blame. Big difference.
What is? I did have that once in a while where I'm just like, okay, if I just get these two to pop up, aw.
Hey, there's three enemies in this room. Thanks for three walks, a dodge, and a jump.
And then you go, oh, no, I really needed this. So you re-roll all your dice and get exactly the same thing somehow. It happens sometimes.
But I kind of like that, because now you're forced to consider it, okay, I have to be able to get through the next round or my next turn no matter what. So now you're trying to set yourself up for success on that level as well. And I've spent more than a minute just staring before I end my turn, like, okay, am I happy with this? Before I hit the button, okay, we're good. I can move on.
It's
next turn, he's dead.
when you're playing it, a lot of people, they get a plan in their head and they just want to go with that regardless, instead of thinking of what dice they've actually got. So they go, oh, no, I didn't get what I wanted. So instead of actually doing something that could have been good and they could have killed someone, they just go, I didn't get what I want, and then they get killed a minute later.
Yeah, let me just end the turn. I'll be fine. Oh. I wasn't fine.
I was thinking the original title for the game was Fuck Your Planning, but that didn't pass the certification boards.
Well, I think Xbox would like that.
Yeah, the only censorship we have done is we neutered all the wretched originally up until fairly near the end of the game. All the little grey goblin guys, they had just a dangly willy just going around there. We wanted to make sure we get a reasonable Peggy rating, and that was borderline, whether that pushed it above a 12 or not. So we thought, oh, well, we'll just have to chop them all off. So now they have a dodgy anime shadow where their crotch is instead.
Oh, God.
So you literally had to neuter your game.
Yeah. I don't know if that made them angrier or more passive.
Well, they're going to die either way you look at it.
If they kill you, they just stand over your body helicoptering their dingus.
That's got to be DLC, is to It's the redickify the wretched.
Downloadable cock.
Yes, yes. DLC. Oh, it's a whole new spin on DLC.
We're not doing DLC anytime soon. The first thing we're doing is actually getting online in there. That's a big thing for us. There's so many people want to play with people across the other side of the country.
I was actually going to ask if that was an original plan for the game or something that you guys might see coming down the line or in a sequel or something, but you guys are looking to add it fairly quickly?
Yeah. Well, we say we. Yeah. Chantel's working on it. I'm cheering her on. Go!
Well, the PC's version's almost done. It's like in a reasonably play. Okay, I haven't tested it, but it seems like it's an okay set. So, and then after that, Xbox, hopefully. You go well.
Yeah.
Nice.
Good luck.
That way, Pappy and I could kill each other regularly on another game.
Yeah. And this is the kind of game where I think I might actually have a chance against you.
Yeah, you would.
Hooray.
You can also connect online and kill yourselves quite happily in this game as well. It works well.
Oh, yeah, no, that's inevitable. As long as I'm taking Joe with me.
And then you can re-roll and get exactly the same as what you got the previous turn and curse the dice. And Chantel call you up and say, not a swear, it's really random, it is, honestly.
Well, we've officially talked with you guys, so we know exactly who to curse now.
Yeah.
It's something, though, that I do like that you guys are listening to the gamers, because I know a lot of the more independent, smaller studios are like, yeah, we either try and go online only or, you know, in-room multiplayer only. So the fact that you guys are looking to make it happen, that's awesome. Because I think that'll really open up the options for this kind of game. Because, yeah, I could totally see me and Joe and then our third co-host, Chris. This is definitely his kind of thing, too, because he's a big fan of board games. And
when he's home, obviously. Yeah.
So we'll nail him down.
He's
at like,
Australia, just to make things harder to get people together.
No, he just makes it harder by being a musician.
Okay.
That bastard.
But he loves what he does, but what he does makes him play live shows all across the Eastern Seaboard every week.
How dare he have ambitions and dreams?
Shame on him. I look forward to beating the crap out of my friends on the East Coast with this game.
We want to make everyone happy, and that's what everyone seems to want. So
we don't want to make everyone happy. Some people are just going to complain about the game being too hard.
You want to make more people suffer by offering the online remote.
Minimum is to watch people die.
it wasn't part of the initial plan. Effectively, we'd said, oh, we'll just make a board game. And then things changed because Microsoft came up and said, oh, we'd quite like this on the Xbox. Half kits, boom, basically chucked them at us. They were very helpful. No, they were very helpful because they said, all right, we want some. I think they're just looking for indie games, and this is a bit different. So decent one to have in their portfolio. So they chucked us the kits at us, and we thought, okay, we'll put it on Xbox. So we were doing that. But then we got several shows we went to, and then especially after it came out, just loads of people said, can we have online? And I was humming and hawing, I don't know if it's worth it, can we do it? And while I was doing that, Chantel was actually just getting on and started coding already. So it's going all right.
So you're the one worrying about whether or not it can be done, and Chantel's just making shit happen.
Yeah, pretty much.
I already did it.
That's awesome. That's teamwork, I guess. Yes, we can. I'm halfway done.
I'll do the work. You do the bitching. We're good. So
Ben specifically for bitching. That's his actual role. He'll come in. He'll just rant about something, whether it's immigrants or the way a game killed him the other night or how long a game is. It doesn't matter. He'll find something. He's exceptionally good at it.
So you mentioned that this is a unique game, which it is incredibly unique. I've never seen a game like this on a console. What kind of inspirations did you guys have, and what made you decide to create a local multiplayer board game, video game, puzzle game that's like Engine. 40 different genres mixed into one?
Well, it started out originally as an actual board game that we used to play in the office for like years. And then we just made it into a video game.
It was one of the people who came in, one of the people who came into the office who were doing contract work for someone, and he was having a look at it and pointed out the obvious: you guys make video games for a living, why don't you change that into a video game? That simple.
So, just using that outside eye, like, hey, why aren't you guys making that a game? It looks like fun. Huh.
Because we just make board games in here just for fun. It's just as a pastime sometimes, and we play something every Friday afternoon. Helps us wind down for the weekend or get stressed out on a different thing rather than work.
Hey, that works. What other board games do you guys like playing?
Oh, well, for the last year or so, we've been playing a big RPG thing called Resoria, but that doesn't matter because we invented that, so no one else will know what it is.
That's fair.
Before that, we played a lot of Living Dungeon before that. We didn't play Living Dungeon too much while we're actually making the game, although we did have quite a few sessions where we got a bunch of people in.
Need to take a break from it.
So yeah, we got like 6 people in to have some nice games of Living Dungeon while we were making it. But most of the time we were playing Resoria, or we played the Firefly game. We've got a section of board games over in the corner. The Firefly game and another zombie card game, which we invented as well, so there's no point in doing that one.
Star Wars RPG, that was pretty cool.
Star Wars RPG was alright. That was silly. A bit weird.
So how many board games have you guys invented?
At the moment, I've got 3, I think, over there, with another couple of possible ones coming.
Have any been mass-produced? Is anything available in America on store shelves?
Didn't bother, basically. It costs a lot of money to get things made. And we did try a Kickstarter, but we did it in terrible timing, so we got no publicity whatsoever. We did it while we were away, so we couldn't even help it. We were away at EGX at the time.
One of our friends actually works on making board games and stuff, and he decided to move to New Zealand to pursue his passion. So,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't think the moving had anything to do with board games. Well, he does make board games, and so yeah, he's talked about the difficulty of kind of breaking new ground in that. And I think a lot of it, is timing or just getting the right thing out at the right time. You know, like Catan. You know, again, our third host Chris loves the shit out of Catan. I look at that game and I'm like, if I wanted to hate somebody, I would just work with them.
Oh my god, that's a good way to put it, I guess.
Yeah, I enjoy the board games that tend to be more cooperative or just goofy, or the ones where feelings aren't hurt. Like, I refuse to play Risk with friends.
Risk is a friendship killer.
Yeah, because I will give you the shirt off my back if you need it. But in Risk, I will murder your family to take that country.
I have a feeling the Living Dungeon could be a pretty good friendship killer as well.
The more I think about it, the more I can't wait. Can't wait to get in the same room as Joe.
Yeah, a lot of insults get thrown during the game, but people seem to be all right afterwards. Apart from accusations of bias and cheating, obviously, everywhere. Bias is a common one. If you're playing the actual board game, you usually have a human DM. So every time, and it's usually me, so every time we're playing, it's biased. Whenever anything happens, someone says it's biased towards or against a particular player every single turn.
Always.
Yeah. And let's be honest, how many times is it bias?
I'm always playing biased towards the loser. So whoever's the furthest behind, I help them the most and I'm nice to them. Whoever's in the lead, I kill them more.
See, I'm usually always winning. So I usually get all the bias. Yeah. I always win.
You get all the best cards as well.
Yeah.
You just try and kind of keep it even so that it it's a little longer game.
Yeah, try and get it to sudden death if I can. Good fun. It's not so bad. It's quite often there's only one point in it when there's a victory. Quite often. Mm. It's usually close till the end. The game kind of naturally sits that way. So it usually gets close. You get someone who's hopeless always and just falls behind horribly. But the last big game we had with 3 teams of 2 people, that was really good. And that came down to 1 point in the last turn.
Damn.
Yeah, Chantal has to get that in there. She won. She won. Pretty much every
I'm like Red and Queen of Living Dungeon.
When we play the video game, though, I think I'm ahead in numbers.
Yeah.
Just Ben's just lazy.
How many tables have been flipped during your board game nights?
It's been close, but I don't think it's ever happened.
I'm disappointed at that answer. I was hoping for a good double-digit number with how much board games you play.
Well, we're British, you see, so it's more just seething rage under the table. Excuse me one moment. I have to leave the room for an instant. You're screaming in the background when you come back in. How's everybody doing?
You just
these
install a
bloody
punching bag.
Twats! I'm going to kill them all!
You just install a punching bag into the next room over.
We do actually have a punching bag in the next room over, so that's not a problem. The gym's across the corridor from us. Go in and bite it. Yeah.
That feeling when you make a joke during an interview and it turns out to be the truth.
Even better.
Oh, man.
So what made you guys decide to actually give that an option in the game where you could have the DM be biased towards people?
Because we did it in the board game, it was always a common joke that there'd be bias, and I literally did try to make the game even to bring it up so that everyone was near about the same. So we thought it'd be good to put it in. And we added a few more biases, like the ability to just pick on one person just seemed like it'd be fun.
We played a real board game like that.
Yeah, we did, that's true.
Everyone ganged up on me. So.
But yeah, but the DM was biased in your favor that time.
Yes.
So yeah, it was the DM and you versus everyone.
Man, that's crazy how just in depth the game can be with bias and teamwork and.
Yeah, but that's like an RPG though, so I love it.
Well, we wanted it kind of a fairly fast paced RPG. One of the reasons when it was designed is because Resoria was good fun, but it took a whole afternoon to play, and we wanted something that could be played a bit faster than that. That was the crux of it. So that's why we got rid of the rolls and counter rolls and everything. So you just have the one roll and those are your actions and that's what you've got to do. And again, the time limit to speed things up. And that just turned into a really good combination.
Which is good. Pappy, what was the game you were talking about the other week about where you had to roll for everything that happened?
Well, no, that was the one that was... MERPS, Middle Earth Roleplay.
All right.
Yeah, that's an old school. Like, I think... I want to say it was Gary Gygax. I haven't played it in over a decade, but someone who worked on Dungeons & Dragons decided that it wasn't difficult enough and there weren't enough charts. So he made Middle Earth Roleplay, and so roll to attack.
Pretty bad.
I run a D&D campaign right now. I'm playing in a Star Wars campaign on alternate weekends. No, I'm huge on the tabletop stuff. But yeah, it's with Middle Earth Roleplay, it rolled a hit. All right, now they're going to roll to defend. Now you're going to roll to counter. Now you're going to roll. Oh, you did hit them. Now you're going to roll on this location chart. Okay, so you hit their arm. Now we're going to roll to see how much damage you did. All right, now we're going to do an additional roll because you did enough damage to see if you handicap them at all for their future rolls. It's like, Jesus Christ, can't I just slice his arm off and call it a day?
I enjoy D&D, but I always thought D&D was pretty bad for that because as soon as you got into combat, it's like everyone was like, yeah, you're going to have a big fight. And as soon as you get into combat, the entire thing slows to a crawl as everyone has to do their Thaco rolls and then calculate whether they hit or not.
Well, 4th edition got rid of Thaco. That was the best thing they ever did. 3rd edition got rid of Thaco. 4th edition really streamlined it. I'm running a horror, survival horror, and they cleared... Yeah, 8 enemies. It took about 30 minutes, but, you know, we kept it fun. I always try and be interactive. You know, when you're doing a game like that, it is the DM. If they're boring, the game is boring. The combat is boring.
Yeah.
And there's no getting around.
I always try to find if there was other ways to get around combat or you did something appropriate to slaughter someone. I was like, yeah, just go with it. It makes the story better. It moves things along. That's it. DM prerogative, really. It just reminded me of another game that we designed that we played a lot of the time, which everything happens at once. That's quite cool. It's like a big mech game that everyone fires at everyone at once, and then you calculate what happens.
So it's like the Mexican standoff, but everyone just decides at the same moment, all right, let's do this.
Yeah, you place tokens down to see where you're, because there's a movement phase and then there's a combat phase, but it's not someone's turn, then the other person's turn. You just put down counters in 3 places where you're going to move a mech, and only one of those is the truth. And then everyone moves. So you end up right next to each other sometimes, and then you both just fire everything you've got at each other, and everyone just falls to pieces and dies.
I would play the hell out of that game.
Well, yeah, we did. We played that. That was the one we played for a good year of the campaign. I never made it into anything afterwards because I just don't. I'm just terrible like that. We We actually also, in terms of video games, we've got a stack of something like 5 unfinished games.
We started games and just forgot about them. We should finish them.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad
but
you guys.
But that takes work to finish things.
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah, we've got a couple of small games for the phone, which were just fun. I still just haven't got around to finishing them and tidying them up and getting them out there.
Get some minions in, get them to finish it for us.
There you go.
Yeah, I've used the local kids from the college and the university and say, hey, would you fancy a little bit of work experience? And then chain them to the desk.
Would you like an unpaid internship? We promise not to beat you too often.
Too often. That's the important part. I mean, interns need to be beaten. Just moderation. That's the important part.
You got to start with a good bit of mental torture first to get the humiliation. So they know their place.
I feel that if you've decided to make games for a living, there's a certain built-in mental torture there.
That's true.
Yeah. As a coder, yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, Joe and I get to enjoy the finished products. We get to sit down and go, hey, this is a lot of fun. Hey, look, we're playing this game. You guys are the ones who decided, I'm going to spend the next several thousand hours of my life making something fun for someone else.
Pretty much how it goes. You were right about everything except the first part, because nowadays, the way games work, you don't get to play the finished product when it first comes out. That's not how it works.
True.
You get to play an advanced beta with plenty of problems, and then we go back and fix things that people find. the bigger the game, the more true that is. Oh, it doesn't even run. Oh, that's fine. There'll be a patch in a week or two.
So I paid $60, and my character is half inside a rock. Oh, don't worry. That's our day 2
patch.
It's
a feature. It's a feature. It's not a bug. It is a feature.
Yeah, you're right, though. I mean, as much as I love Fallout, even Fallout 3, you know, the finished product a year and a half later, you'd still have rad scorpions glitching into the scenery.
Oh, yeah. That's part of the joy I have for Fallout 4. I played Fallout 4. I've just got reams of videos of me firing things into space. I'll just shoot them with a pistol, and all of a sudden they do a cartwheel or start breakdancing on the floor as they die.
The ragdoll physics in Fallout are amazing sometimes.
A 4 did take it to another level. Like, there's times where you just, I don't even know why, but all of a sudden everyone goes to outer space. I'm just going to run with that.
Gotta love it.
Oh, I do. I've actually not played Fallout 4 for like 3 whole weeks now. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Too much other stuff to play.
I know, that's your fault.
I actually just finished it at the weekend after drawing it out for hours. It was level 98 at the end.
Wow.
See, I'm on my third playthrough, and I can't say I beat it yet. I play it till I'm happy with my character's storyline, and then I just go, okay, I'm going to play a different type.
Oh, yeah, don't have any spoilers.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I play through good, and then I'm like, okay, I've done enough good. Now I'm going to play an asshole. Okay, I've done enough asshole. Now I'm going to play, like, a pickpocket. You know, like, I build a character archetype, and then I play until I'm satisfied.
And then you start all over.
And then I start all over.
Morally complex characters that do things that people don't expect. I don't just go like Paragon or Renegade or anything. Do a whole bunch of random stuff based on no particular ideals, just what the character would like to achieve.
That's where my asshole character comes in. I think that's that kind of... I'm not necessarily going to do the bad thing. I'm going to do the dick move thing. Like, oh, I might help you out, and then I'll put a grenade in your pocket when I'm done.
I have tried so hard over dozens of games to play a true asshole character, and I always puss out. Like, I always grow a conscience. Like, oh, no, these digital people have feelings and lives that I can't destroy. And Pappy's like, fuck them all, they're all dead.
Yeah, you get to that point and says, and now to become the ultimate evil master, all you have to do is kill this puppy.
Damn it.
But it's so cute.
Look at its eyes wobbling at me.
It's such a cute puppy.
It's going to grow up to attack a little girl. I must end its life now.
But maybe that girl's like a total bitch. And the dog's doing... The dog's... Yeah. Future female Hitler. And the dog could have saved the world.
Mustache, obviously.
I got nothing. I got nothing for that. Now, I always play all my RPGs good, And because I do enjoy the good storyline, it's easier to play as a good person. But that second time through, I'm just going to be a jerk. I will strong arm everyone for extra cash. I will rob people, and then I will shoot puppies.
Poor puppies.
I'm looking forward to when games allow you to be more morally complicated, and you can actually work towards what's actually the greater good. So you do get to measure whether one person gets to live or 100 people gets to live, but you know the one person, that kind of thing. Doesn't a lot of that, it's usually really ham-fisted and obvious. Are you going to kill this person, or will you kill them for an extra 10 credits?
I think, honestly, the closest that's come to those real moral quandaries was Telltale's The Walking Dead. I think it's the closest anything's come so far to that kind of...
The problem I have with that is that so many choices, there was choice A, which was stupid, and choice B, which was stupid. But there wasn't the option C, which was the sensible thing to do. It's like, oh, we could just do it. No, we can't. That's not allowed. You've got to do stupid thing A or stupid thing B. No choices other than that.
That is true, yeah. Do I save this person and risk getting killed, or do I save that person and risk getting killed? Why can't I just throw somebody a rope and fucking stay up here?
You guys handle this on your own. I got shit to do.
I got breathing to do, and I'm a huge fan. I'm going to keep doing it.
The zombie thing is not for me. I'm going to be inside playing some Game Boy. Or playing some board games. Hell, they could do that. You should hook up the people in The Walking Dead with the Living Dungeon board game.
There's punishment for their poor choices.
They're like, fuck this, we're going outside with the zombies. I can't deal with you people anymore.
That's actually the boss fight now. You have to play the boss as he's the DM in the Living Dungeon.
I have to admit, actually, that there's some extra features in the board game that we have that we haven't put in the video game. There's a couple of extra mods that might go in as well. Something to think about. If we get on the online stuff, such as there's the... Because normally you've got Assassination and you've got Headhunter. I don't know if you've played any of these at all, did you actually? So Assassination mode, say there's three of you. Player 1 kills Player 2, Player 2 kills Player 3, and Player 3 kills Player 1. And if you die for any reason at all, that counts as a point. So obviously Player 2 is trying to run away from Player 1, but they can't kill Player 1, otherwise Player 3 gets a point.
Oh.
Ooh.
I need that.
Friends.
Yeah. Yeah, they're useful sometimes. I know they're a hassle most of the time. They just demand things. Like,
they like visit, and then they eat your food, and then they stink up your bathroom. It's like, what the hell, people?
I'll be honest. The two people most likely to game here with me don't like to leave their own damn apartments, and they're just stuck on Steam all day long. It's like, come on, guys. You can play video games at my house. It's okay. You can see the sun for 5 minutes.
I'll make them buy the Steam version of the game.
Yeah.
Right?
There we go.
Didn't catch that, sorry.
Oh, he has friends that never get off Steam, so I told him that just make his friends buy the Steam version of the game.
Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah, the next mode is Headhunter mode, which when you kill someone, you don't get a point, they drop a gem, and you've got to collect that gem. So if you kill them across the other side of the board, it's hard to get. So someone else can just come along and steal it. So you get fast characters not bothering killing anyone. They just run around and steal heads whenever they get dropped.
Oh man!
But you've got to kill one of every other player, basically. So once you've killed them once, you don't want to kill them again because that'll leave free pickups for everyone else.
So it's like the Trivial Pursuit of murdering friends.
we should make them triangles so they can fit them in an amulet.
DLC. That's the DLC. We're working this out. We help all the developers we talk to. We help them with DLC. Yeah, and none of it ever becomes real.
Yeah, the third mode that's in there currently is escape mode, which sounds really simple because you just have to get, it's a 3x5 board, and you just have to get from one side to the other side. And that sounds really easy, but usually everyone just backstabs each other on the first tile, so no one gets anywhere. And the fourth one was the one I talked about before, which is random assassination, which is you actually get assigned random targets several points in the game. But if we're doing online mode, it would be nice, probably wouldn't do it straight away, but it would be good if we could add... blind assassination, so you don't know who's trying to kill you. That'll be because you can do that on one screen, but once you've got multiple screens, we can have that going on.
Yeah, that's evil. That is evilicious. I love it. Like, the addition of online has me stupidly excited for this game.
That's the debate. You know, some people are really excited for it, and some people are just ranting that it's not there yet.
We cover this on the show all the time. It's people's impatience, and they feel like, why didn't you do this in the first place? Well, you come and make the damn game.
Yeah,
it's time and money. Yeah. That's the obvious answer. We've ever said to like some really, really nice reviewers, and they have deliberately, because they know that online's coming, they said they've marked us down a point until we get online, and then we'll put us up in a lot of thanks. we get a load of sevens, because some people give like 8.5s, but we get it right down to like 6.5. There was actually one woman who just made loads of mistakes and had no idea how to play it, and she said she gave it a 5. And we're like, what? That's just all wrong. Our review's just full of errors. So she probably like say, you can't really write up to someone and say, you actually got a load of things wrong in your review. That's not how it works at all. You just can't do that. They'll just ban you.
But the problem is those people should have the common sense to know, okay, this game is not for me. I don't know what I'm doing. I have to recuse myself from reviewing it because I can't give it a proper review.
You see that, but it's probably fair because, I mean, yeah, it was a bad review, but she does know her audience, you'd hope, as a reviewer. You'd hope that she knows her audience, and the people who read her stuff would probably be similar to her in thinking. That would be my argument in favor of her, of what she's done.
But at least throw in the caveats. I reviewed Firewatch last week, and I had to throw in the caveat that my PC decided that it could not handle the game for shit. So I was like, yeah, I had fun with what I could, even though I was getting like 6 frames per second. But try the PlayStation version. It's a fun game. Here's my experience with it, but it's a limited experience because of my PC. You know, throw out that caveat in there, at least, you know, so people know where you're coming from.
Yeah.
People generally do. But the problem you have is that a lot of people rely on things like Metacritic. So if you make a game that's weird, some people are going to hate it, some people are going to like it. You end up with average scores. And if you look at our Xbox rating is at 3 stars. And there wouldn't be a lot of people who gave it 3 stars. It'll be one way or the other.
Yeah. I was just going to ask, how's the total reception been so far?
Mostly positive. People who like it tend to really like it. But there have obviously been a few people who just hated it. Especially some Russian guy who, when it first came out, just ranted because we hadn't made it work on 1610 monitors. And he just ranted it and said we were pretty much the worst people ever. The worst people exist. We were total con artists.
Did he rant in Russian or in English?
Oh, no. He was kind enough to rant in English.
That was nice.
Yeah, we fixed it for pretty much within a couple of days. But, yeah, it was just a huge
I mean, you're rant. Still Hitler, though, because you launched it wrong. Come on. We got to be honest. You're horrible people for not thinking of that one single Russian dude.
Well, that's how it works. We're obviously terrible people.
Seriously, how dare you?
Oh yeah, but you get fantastic rants. You get fantastic rants from people. I tend to just leave them there until they become completely irrelevant. Like there's some things I'll delete. People complain about lack of online when we get the online there. But at the moment, I've just left it there. And there's a big one saying someone says, "Do not buy." Blah 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 blah. It's not online yet. And then underneath, you start getting people ranting at those people who were ranting, and they were entitled.
It is online, dickhead. Well, it wasn't back then, asshole.
The
and then
internet.
They just go back and forth.
Yeah.
Your Until mom. No, your mom.
Yeah.
The good old your mom fallback.
Hey, when you have nothing else
that's
to say,
the more politically correct version of the you gay.
Yeah. you can't say it
well from you're gay to your mom because I get really mature about it.
Well, if just in case they are gay, then you're just stating a fact. You're not really insulting them.
Well,
I wonder how many times that's backfired.
Anyway, someone might as well just say, "Oh, your eyes are blue." It's like, so what? Someone says you're gay. It's like, who cares nowadays? No one needs to defend anything. It doesn't matter anymore.
You're gay. Yeah,
that just
and
means you've got a better fashion sense than normal if someone says you're gay.
Pappy, you have hair.
Yeah.
That'll teach you, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. I'm a bad person.
You really are. So what other games are you guys working on? I know you mentioned that you have like half a dozen unfinished games. Is there anything that you're actually actively working on?
Yeah, The Living Dungeon. We're not finished with it yet. We're adding the online. After that, we'll probably finish a few of the little ones because they won't take too long. Most of them are just small games.
Little mobile, itchy, puzzly games. Things that are like practically finished. One of them
involves murdering people.
Always fun.
Yeah, accidentally sometimes. You're supposed to murder a vampire. You're a lady vampire in Victorian England in a little house, and you've got to find out who the vampire is and stab them without stabbing the wrong person. And by placing items around the house, like you can place garlic around, they'll move away from garlic, but other people will randomly move as well, so you've got to try and whittle down who the right person is and then stab them without anyone else finding out. And then the other one is a game all about peeing yourself and not getting to the toilet in time.
The end of the spectrum.
Yeah. No one die. Well, actually, you die horribly and piss yourself everywhere. But yeah, it's one of those games where you run and you've got to jump or dodge. You're always running because it's a dream. So you're always running and you've got to jump and duck things. And there's some collectibles that you can use, like a pogo stick and obviously a pogo stick or grappling hook. You've got to try and just get to the toilet at the end of the level. But it's physics based, so as soon as you trip over something, you just piss yourself and piss everywhere as you do a cartwheel. It's just stupid. we're just playing with rigid bodies and stuff. And
please tell me that's console bound, because I want to piss myself all over the consoles.
It wasn't, but you know, we might upgrade it one day. It was just something we did to take a break from doing Living Dungeon, because obviously we love making games, but we're busy, and we got to a point where it's like, oh, we need a break. We've been focused on this for so long, we need a little break. So we took a month off and just started messing about with things.
I really want to play that game now.
Move that to the top of the list instead.
Oh my god. I remember what the hell was the game? Don't Shit Your Pants?
Yeah, it's like a physics running based version of that.
That's fantastic. And just roll flipping everywhere, just pissing oh my god, I want to play that now. Just imagine the kind of liquid texture you could get on the with the power of the Xbox One or the PS4.
Yeah, make it all PBR, like just total high end with refraction through the urine stream.
All the fucking particle effects that you could get when the piss just hits a wall or something. Just
have it keep going so it fills up and you get liquid dynamics.
Man, you could have lens flare and stuff. So is there any thought to porting any of your older games to the Xbox One or PS4, like Newton versus the Horde or Bullet Trap, anything like that?
No, not really, to be honest. I just like to do new things most of the time. If we got someone else in, we might convert a couple of things. It's nice that you actually checked our website. Let's see what we've done. Bullet Trap was a funny one because that was the first game I did myself when I was learning to code. That was one that it got poor sales but great reviews. People absolutely loved it because that is rock hard. Like, to get to level 50, it's rock hard. That's just in the Xbox. There is a PC version. We could release it on the PC. It runs on the PC just for the fun of it. That was probably something that we should do just so people can play it.
I remember seeing Newton versus the Horde on a website as some kind of giveaway I think one of you did years ago.
Yep, it was a game originally on an Xbox competition. That's how we started our company, actually, because it was a competition to make a game based on Old Spice.
That's what it was.
Yeah. So there were tons of hundreds of entries, obviously, into this competition, and then judges picked, I don't know who the judges were, somewhere in America there was five judges, and they picked five games out of all the entries that were going to be the ones that were voted on, and then they were put forward and they were released and the public voted on them to see which one was going to win the prize. And we were lucky enough that people liked our game the best and voted that. So that game was officially the best game in the world at that point in that competition. And it gave us the money to actually start the company. And what we did, we waited for ages with that and did nothing. And then we made it into the worst game in the world for the Wii. A simple miscalculation. So yeah, because that was it was well reviewed and well liked, and when we put the first version out, but when we put it on the Wii, it was on WiiWare, And we were playing it, it's all right. But then our first review came out, and it was 1 out of 10. And we were just like, what the hell? What's wrong? And they were saying it's unplayable. And it was like, I don't have a clue why, because we'd had loads of people in testing it and such, and they played it, and everything was fine. And it was like, if it got maybe an 8 or something, or a 7, that'd be like, what? But it got a 1 out of 10 as being completely unplayable. And it was like, I don't know what's going on. But we found out sometime later that in America, people's living rooms are a lot bigger by default. So all our fan mail was coming from Eastern Europe and South America, where people have small living rooms. But in North America, where people had big living rooms, they were too far away from the TV to accurately use the Wii pointer. It was just for them. It was totally legitimate that the guy said he couldn't play it, because he probably couldn't. He was probably sitting at the end of a firing range trying to use it. But yeah.
So did you win a lifetime supply of Old Spice from that?
No, unfortunately. They kind of had, after it was done, there must have been some political falling out or something, because it just disappeared off the face of the earth. It was taken off the websites and everything. So we were on the website, the winner's website, for a little bit, but then they changed the design of the website, so we were a tiny bit down in the corner. And then by next year, when the next competition came out, they'd taken it off completely, so I don't know what happened there.
You'd think they'd be like, hey, check out last year's winner, you know, something.
Well, they normally do, but this time it was just gone. It's like I said, I wouldn't want to speculate. Maybe
they all played it on the Wii, I guess.
Yeah, that's probably what it was. It wasn't out. It was well over a year afterwards before we even put it on the Wii. We were busy doing contract work and trying to be a business at the time. It didn't work out. Being a business, it's just pointless. So we're going back to just making what we want now, which is a lot more fun. Less soul destroying.
Do you have any plans to create any other video game versions of the board games you've made? Or the card games you've made?
To be honest, right, we're making this. The next thing we make will not be turn-based. That's just not going to happen. We have to do something different. We're not one of these companies that only makes racing games or anything. We'll have to do something. I mean, you can see that by the list of games we've got on our site. They're all very different from each other. So it'll be something different. If we expand a bit, we might get someone else in to do that. But not at the moment of plan. I'll keep making them in the office, and we can play them in the office, and that'll be great fun. But no one else is getting them. They're all ours. They're just ours.
They're for me.
I'd love to see the characters from The Living Dungeon in like an actual real-time action-adventure, maybe hack-and-slash RPG-style game. Because I love the character designs in the game. I think keeping those characters alive in a different style of game would be really cool.
There's a significant possibility that we'll stick with the universe. The universe is quite padded out. Even the RPG that we created, the Resoria RPG, is actually set in the same universe, different continent, so the culture is a bit different, but it's set in the same universe. So we'll probably keep with the universe, because a lot of people are really interested in the universe. People are quite liking the book that was written as well about it.
Yeah, I mean, I like your characters. Seem like they were actually three-dimensional. You know, they're dropped into this dungeon, but they actually have reasons and past and stuff. That's nice. You know, you don't have.
That's another thing we get. Some people say, "Oh, they loved it. They love the depth and stuff, the characters." And other people say, "Oh, the story doesn't fit together. We don't understand it." But you actually have to get to level 18 out of the game before you have any idea what's going on with the story. Otherwise, you just know that people have ended up here somehow. So it looks like the story kind of looks on the surface like it's a one-on-one fighting game story. Like someone killed someone's dad, now they've come for revenge. That's what it looks like. But it's actually all part of a bigger plan that you don't find out really until right near the end of the game.
Well, I'm hoping I could eventually experience the story if these shadows stop being pricks to me.
The trouble being that the game is so difficult that you might forget what happened at the start of the story by the time you get to the end. You really have a separate thing with the cutscenes and then just going on so people can follow it. But yeah,
get people to catch up on the story that they got their ass kicked from so much.
Last time on Living Dungeon.
You died. God damn it.
It's very easy for people to get to halfway through and go, I have no idea what's going on in the story, because it's... We tried to keep it fairly light, but it's not simple. It's actually quite complicated when you actually review it. It's just a question of whether people can keep the focus and remember what's going on. So again, some people love it. Some people just go, I don't get what's happening.
Well, I definitely think it's worth people checking out and trying, and if they're into that style of game, because it's definitely a niche audience. It's not for everyone, but if it clicks with you, it is a shitload of fun, and I'm loving it.
Yeah, I actually just like it as something different, because I do tend to play a lot of RPGs and first-person shooters. So, oh, hey, look, a game that kind of moves at a more relaxed pace, but I still have to think and try. It's kind of nice. Especially since, like, the last 20 games Joe sent me to review were all, like, freaking endless runners and shit.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't deal with doing... I've done a lot of... I don't know if you saw the website, but there's a game on there called Blast Buggies. Another one we finished, but we never actually released it. It's just ours. But that has like 3,000 odd hand drawn sprites that were all pixel by pixel drawn. So I'd had enough of pixel art. I didn't want to do any more pixel art forever, basically, after that. So yeah, I had to go for something. The basic reason that it's done all in like high end 3D stuff is basically because I was sick of doing like cartoony and pixel art stuff. I just wanted to do it.
And yeah, that works.
Yeah, the next game is going to be PBR because I want to play with toys. That's how it's going to happen.
Nice. So, Pappy, did you want to ask your trademark question?
I think we got some of them answered already. But, yeah, when you guys weren't working on the game, what kind of games were you playing in your downtime?
Well, it's taken up a lot of time recently.
It's all about Fallout.
Oh, that's good, because our most common answer to that question is Dark Souls.
No, it hasn't been that. I haven't touched Dark Souls yet. It's kind of one of those things that's on the list of to get round to at some point. You get the same thing with, you'll have like a couple of big games, and I don't tend to have too many games on the go at once. Chantel does. She likes to have 5 games on the go at the same time. And,
yeah.
But yeah, I tend to play one thing, finish it, and then play something else, but... There's a few games. I only recently played Bioshock Infinite. Only recently went through that. So I was years late catching that up and up and thought...
Hey, it was right. Worth the wait, though. I love that game.
It was good fun. I liked it, but the story was stupid. Didn't make
it. It was really pretty.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Really, it was
game was
fun,
gorgeous.
Simple game, yeah.
I think they tripped themselves up with the way they were going with the story, but... shooting things out of your hand. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, that's game-wise, it was great fun, so I'm not going to complain about that, because it was one of the free games, wasn't it, on Games of Gold? I also played the Swapper recently, which is a nice indie game.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that one. I thought that was a really solid game.
Yeah, because I can't really be bothered most of the time with platformers these days. Again, it's like first-person shooters and platformers. I played to death years ago. I played millions of them, so it has to be something new and different in them for me to be interested. Otherwise, I go, yeah, it's a slightly prettier version of the same thing. I can't be bothered with it.
Yeah, I think I played the Swapper when it originally came out on PlayStation, and I ended up picking up again on Xbox because it was such a fun game, and I like to support developers who not only put out unique and fun games, but they support the platform of our choice on the Xbox. Like on our show, I'm the only one with a PlayStation, so when PlayStation is the only platform for a game, a lot of times we just like, I guess we'll wait on it to see if it comes to Xbox, or in the case of Street Fighter, we're just not going to cover it because exclusive sucks. So I'm excited that you're going to...
Chris and I are the guys who like those kind of games more so than Joe. So him being the only one who could play it doesn't make any sense.
I like fighting games.
We have absolutely no loyalty, I don't think, at all.
And that's the way it should be. Just platform agnostic. Go put it everywhere. Let all gamers enjoy the good games.
Yeah, it pretty much came on the Xbox first because Microsoft were more forthcoming and just saying, do it for us. They were more helpful. Sony were there, but at the time they were interested in the PS Vita a lot, and we didn't have the resources, basically. So they've been very friendly as well, but we just didn't have the resources to do it on the Vita as well at the time. So when Microsoft came along and just said, pair of kits, do this, we were like, okay, well, give it a go. It's that simple. So yeah,
it's hard to say no when they're just like, here, have a dev kit.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I've got nothing bad to say about either of them. Yeah.
Yeah, Sony gave up on the Vita pretty quick, huh?
Yeah, but I never liked the interface for it at all, if I'm honest. It wasn't.
I'm not a huge PS4 fan, but I love the Vita. The bubble layout is still stupid, but the actual system itself, I love the thing, and it's a shame that Sony is just ignoring it so much lately.
I don't think it's sold enough. That was the problem. It just wasn't popular enough for them to back it.
Which is weird, though, because Japan, they live on mobile games. You think that they just push out some more games for it, get the popularity up, and I don't see why it wouldn't sell.
No, it sells well over there. I don't know. Whatever. Sony's drunk.
Well, we obviously know better with our huge amount of expertise on the business statistics for a worldwide distribution. It's obviously our area of expertise. So, yeah, Sony, why are you listening to us? We obviously know what we're doing. I couldn't say. I have no idea why they do things the way they do them, but I'm sure they have lots and lots of very boring charts.
Oh, yeah. No, it's all marketing and sales and stuff. Stuff that we definitely don't want to have to look at anyway.
Charts are fun.
No.
Only for charts of death. Yeah.
I'm in middle management. I can guarantee you charts are fucking...
Well, it depends on the chart, I guess. Eye charts could be fun, especially when someone like me, who still has pretty decent eyesight, can piss off all of his friends and family members who are stuck wearing glasses and contacts. Ha ha.
Personal anecdote?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's already told us that. Yeah, okay, so he doesn't get on with his family. He's got a fetish for urine. Okay, we've learned a lot about Joe so far.
That's what this show is. We're here to teach people about ourselves and each other.
Golden shower fetish.
And he appreciates that he can see it clearly without glasses.
Indeed. Crystal clear.
Apart from the cat in the way.
The particle effects of the urine splashing against my face.
All right, so I'm done here.
On that note, it's been about an hour. We want to thank you guys for coming on and talking with us first thing in the morning over there. I know Pappy is eager to crawl into bed and die.
Yes, in that order.
Well, good luck with that.
I appreciate it.
Chantel's got a sore throat, so she's been struggling through this as well.
I'm poorly.
So yeah,
hands down the most polite person who's ever been on our show.
Thank you.
It's a change of pace to have someone polite and quiet on the show instead of
that's an insult, I'm afraid, from these guys.
Chilling.
No, we really do appreciate you guys taking time out of your schedule to talk to us about the game and everything, and we're going to help build the hype, though, because I know Joe and I are definitely going to look forward to when we don't have to be in the living room together, because that only happens once a year, and I want to murder him in this game before then.
And he smells, and I just, it's a problem.
Hey, you're the guy who owns 5 cats there, lady.
You're the one who vapes, douchebag.
All right, I thought you were talking about when you were referencing the bathroom problems earlier.
Oh, that's definitely him. He can't even deny that.
Turns out I didn't know I was lactose intolerant until I was like 27.
So
Joe's bathroom paid the price.
Many, many times. He is an evil, evil person. And I've known him for way too long. But again, I want to thank the two of you for coming on our show and talking with us. I wish you guys the best with the Living Dungeon. I can't wait to see what else comes from you guys and what kind of updates and additions come for the Living Dungeon. Is there any kind of final words or final message that you would like to give to our listeners?
Have fun killing each other.
I get it. That would be nice.
All right. Have a good one, guys. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye.
All right. So now we can seamlessly seg into our pre-recorded segment.
Oh, man, that was fun. Always good interviews. Good interview. Not just saying that because we didn't actually record with them yet, but, you know, it was totally, definitely good.
Hey, look on the bright side. The last time you made that lie, it was 3 hours before we actually interviewed them. Now it's 2 hours before we actually interview them.
True, true. So things can only go up from here.
Yeah, yeah. And hopefully your computer won't be a dick.
Oh, my computer's runs flawlessly. By the way, if you would like to donate money to help get me a new computer,
if you'd like to donate a computer that was put together after 2003.
True, very true. just all inquiries can be sent to the smlpodcast@gmail.com. And speaking of things being sent to the smlpodcast@gmail.com, we...
Stop sending us dildo pics, guys. Come on.
No, don't stop. Don't.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, you're the one who checks the Gmail, so keep sending dildo pics.
Anyway, we have a shitload of contest entries that we can go through because we have this thing called giveaways that we do on our show. We were lucky enough to have three copies of three different games. We have Breath of Fire from the amazing folks at Capcom. We have Riptide GP2 from the also amazing people at Vector Unit. And then we have Qbert Rebooted, the Xbox One edition, by the somewhat decently okay people at Loot Interactive.
I like them. They swear.
Yeah, they're fucking cool.
Yeah, and they also make games designed to piss you the fuck off. Yeah. So I can appreciate that.
But anyway, we asked you people to shoot us an email at the SML
podcast.
What do you
mean by you people?
Shut up, racist. Send us an email, is that better, at the smlpodcast@gmail.com, and we asked you to tell us your favorite retro arcade game and why it was your favorite. And we're going to pick three of you people to get a free code for Qbert Rebooted on the Xbox One.
And retro did mean early arcade games.
Yeah,
not...
like we don't want Area 51. Or like the Fast and the Furious. Like, give us old school shit.
Yeah, because I'll be honest, even if you are younger, you should still know what retro means in the world of video games. So, Oh, I played it when I was 8. Well, you're 17 now, so fuck off. That's not what we're looking at. We're looking at how much time and money did you spend on games that ran on the equivalent of a watch nowadays?
God damn. Anyway, our first email kicks it off in true retro style. Charlie Huang writes in saying, my favorite retro arcade game is Pac-Man. As a kid, I would spend all my free time in the arcade, spending all of my allowance. It was totally worth it.
You remember remember Glenn Case?
I heard of him.
Yeah, you remember, that just reminds me of his skills with Ms. Pac-Man. I think he actually had like the number one score at one point.
I don't know. The Ms. Pac-Man games are pretty contested. I know he's got E.T. for the Atari.
Because he's one of three people who sat through it long enough to get a score.
Pretty much. Next email is from Eric Trill. He says, my favorite retro arcade game is Road Blasters. Fuck yeah, dude. I remember going to a boys and girls club when I was younger, and they had arcade games that you could play for free. I remember spending a lot of my time playing Road Blasters. There were 50 levels to that game, which I never knew because I was never able to beat it. I still remember the first time I beat it, too. Fuck you, you're better than me. I was so
one of many people.
Very true. I was so focused that I didn't realize a small crowd had gathered around me to watch. It was such a great feeling once I beat it, since the game was not easy. I was around 8 years old at the time. I'll never forget driving that red car and all the weapons that a plane dropped. You had to catch the weapon and power-ups, or you would be shit out of luck for the rest of the level. I also remember buying an Atari Lynx specifically to play Road Blasters. Up to that point, it was the closest experience to the arcade version you can get. From Eric T.
When I was 8, I couldn't beat like World 1-3 on Mario Brothers at my friend's house. This guy's beating video games like a pro.
Damn. Seriously, Road Blasters is fucking awesome, by the way. So that one might get one based on my soft, weak heart. Next email is from Michael Reyes. Donkey Kong, the king of arcade games. This is probably the first game I ever played, and it got me into gaming as a kid. The game had it all. Donkey Kong and Mario, or Jumpman. These guys are gaming legends, and I remember spending hours and hours in the arcades playing this game to the point where I had big nasty blisters on my hands. I sure do miss the good old days of the arcade. Also, if you haven't seen it yet, I highly recommend everyone go watch The King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters documentary.
Have you ever heard of Donkey Kong's pothead brother?
No.
Yankee Kong? Yeah, watch A Fistful of Quarters. Great, great documentary.
Next email from one of our regulars, Nick Simpson. He says, my favorite retro arcade game was the Terminator 2 arcade game. I remember it having these two giant black guns as the controllers, and it was super hard, but also it blew my mind back in the early 90s when I was like 6 or 7 playing at the arcade in my mall every weekend. Do you remember what malls are?
I think I drive by one once in a while, but I avoid it like the plague.
Back in the day with arcades, yeah. Remember what arcades were?
No.
Anyway, it was basically just an early light gun shooter, but I couldn't help but love and enjoy it because I loved the Terminator film so much and had all the action figures and toys. Good stuff.
I wish my parents let me have fucking T2 action figures when I was only 7.
Next email is from Tembo Elephant. Turtles and my favorite... Absolute favorite game when I was younger was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time. I only got to play it once a year as we would go to Chuck E. Cheese for my birthday every year, and that was the only place around me that had the game, and so I'd make the most of my time and pretty much use all my tokens to play only that. I would spend hours upon hours playing it, and one year when I ran out of tokens, I started searching the coin return slots of other games nearby and underneath cabinets and found a ton of coins to be able to continue playing. And that became my go-to in the years to come, to find more tokens to continue playing in the years and birthdays to come.
That's honestly genius, because kids running around Chuck E. Cheese are dropping shit all the time.
I have never lucked out by finding money left behind from someone else.
Might have been where, too. I remember once or twice I found some as a kid. My game of choice at Chuck E. Cheese was Paperboy, and I think I made it all the way to Wednesday once.
Oh, Paperboy, you crazy bastard. Yeah. Oh, looks like all the regulars are emailing in. We got Lana Lokers entering this one. Growing up, I didn't really have any arcades around me, but there was a pizza place that had a tabletop Pac-Man machine you could play while eating pizza that I loved as it combined my two favorite things together, video game and pizza. That's a good one. So I remember going there once a week with my parents when we would get pizza, and I wouldn't want to leave when we were finished because I had a good game going on one quarter and didn't want to stop. When I was in high school, I would go after class several days a week to grab a quick slice and get a couple of games in. But then around my junior year, they got rid of the Pac-Man table, and soon after, the pizza place closed as well. Obviously, because people were showing up more for Pac-Man than they were for the pizza.
Or maybe she just burned that bitch down because they got rid of the table.
Alana, did you burn it down?
I wonder if that'd be a good way to teach kids how to eat slowly, you know? We leave as soon as you're done with your pizza, but video games, well, as soon as you're done. Okay, tiny little bites.
That'd be fun. All right, next one is from Nick Nunn, another one of our regulars. Two of my favorite things growing up were Marvel Comics and video games. So, of course, my favorite arcade growing up was the 6-person X-Men arcade machine. I loved how big the cabinet was, with up to 6 people being able to play together at the same time. It was a super repetitive game when I played the release on XBLA a couple years ago, but I didn't care about that when I was younger. I just loved being able to smash apart Sentinels as Colossus and Wolverine and Cyclops and Dazzler. Those were my 4 characters I would always play as. I spent so many quarters on that game after school every day. I beat it countless times and, of course, bought it on Xbox Live when it was released. Beat it countless times all over again. Welcome to Die.
Hey, you know what we're gonna hear a lot of in a couple of days.
I swear, I just whenever people do that at MAG, I just want to yell back to them, "Suck a cock, Colossus."
Well, now we can because we can make that a thing. Yeah, the MAGFest Colossus roar. It was funny. It was funny when our friend created it, and it stopped being funny 5 years later.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Let's sigh. All right. Next one is from Alex Cat. My favorite video game series ever is the Marvel vs. Capcom games, and my favorite arcade game is the first in the series, Marvel Super Heroes, based on having the best/luckiest game experience of my life playing it for the first time ever and is what made me fall in love with the series. I was 10 or 11 and on vacation with my parents at Cedar Point for a couple of days, and we were staying at a hotel that had a game room with three games in it: Virtua On, some racing game, and Marvel Superheroes. I had never heard of the game or even seen pictures of it because I wasn't reading video game magazines yet and didn't have the internet yet. So just seeing this game blew my mind, as I was a giant Marvel fan and collected and read a ton of X-Men comics, trading cards, watched the cartoon religiously. So even watching it being played made me already fall in love with it before I even got a chance to touch it. And when I finally did, something just clicked as I beat arcade mode and Thanos with a single quarter, as well as a guy who came up afterwards and wanted to challenge me. It was in an almost euphoric state after that of discovering something new based on something I already loved and having such a positive first experience with it that just made it better. It was right there that it would become my favorite game. I got a copy of it for my PlayStation for Christmas the next year and continued to play it and future Marvel vs. Capcom games as well. But there's still something special and something magical about Marvel Superheroes for me that makes it the best.
That is a great story, but the arcade came out in 95.
I know. That one seems kind of...
Border. And then, yeah, so he
kinda,
played kinda in 96.
Kind of borderline for retro.
Yeah. But again, you know, with the age thing, you know, we were specific, though, when we said on the show what our definition of retro is. I think a game that came out on the Saturday and PlayStation right afterwards might be...
I'll still consider it, though, because it was a pretty solid story.
A solid story, though.
Yeah, which we like having meaningful content on our show. Next one is from Cole. Hey, SML Podcast. My favorite retro arcade game is Pac-Man. Probably cliche sounding, I'm sure. My mom used to work at a little laundromat in the town we lived in for much of my childhood. During the summer, my sister and I would go to the laundromat during my mom's lunch break. We'd walk to the corner store to get Superman ice cream and a hot dog, then walk back to the laundromat where we'd play Pac-Man, each trying to beat the other's high score, until it was time for my mom to go back to work. My mom passed away when I was 17, but when I hear the theme music for Pac-Man, never fails to bring back memories of Superman ice cream with my mom in the back of that old laundromat.
Well, he just hit me in the heart. Damn it.
Oh, the mom card. Damn it.
No, the death card, man. Like, that's even worse. It's like, memories with my mom. And, oh, yeah, by the way, she's dead now.
Next one is from Dan, which, with the email Shih Tzu on you. Nice. Hi, SML Podcast. I would say that Mortal Kombat is my favorite retro arcade game. This is the video game that got me into video games. The first one I remember wanting to play over and over as a kid, igniting my passion for consoles and video games. My sister and I often played together, and that introduced me to the wonderful world of multiplayer gaming, sharing and interacting with another universe with other people. I even asked my elderly grandparents to play with me when they were over. My parents tell me they just held the controller and didn't really know what was going on. Hell, I love the game so much that my parents even named my brother after the God of Thunder, Raiden, because my sister and I pleaded to them. There's actually a cuter, more personal reasoning, but that's a story for another day. Also, Alibaba Day, the Raiden Yell. P.S. If you don't know the Raiden Yell I'm talking about, he presents a video, which we all know the Raiden Yell. So Mortal Kombat, there's another one on the cusp of our acceptability range, and with so many entries.
At least Mortal Kombat was, what, 91, 92?
Yeah, man. Next one is from Ian Lindsay. The best arcade game and why has to be Alex the Kid on Sega Master System. Not really arcade, but maybe it was in arcades, possible. I don't remember that far back. Why? Well, unlike today, this game took skill to beat, and there was none of this continue as much as you like as we have today. And did I mention the music? I mean, that is classic in itself, which I will never forget. That tune, no matter how long I live. Can you say that for any of today's arcade games? Close runner-up would be Sonic the Hedgehog 1 for the exact same reasons. Cheers, Ian.
All right, so yeah, Mortal Kombat was 93. What was the name of that game again?
Marvel Superheroes or Alex the Kid?
The email you just read.
Alex Kid.
Alex, that was the name of the game?
Yeah, I don't remember if Alex the Kid with two Ds. I know it was on Sega Master System. I don't remember if it was in arcades.
Yeah, neither do I. And that's why I'm double checking, because I'm going to have to disqualify a game if it didn't actually come. No, it appeared in the arcade and on the Sega Master System. Okay, so we are safe.
Final email for Cuber is from Lou Pohl. Hey guys, love the show, and I thought I would try my hand at winning stuff. My favorite old school arcade game is definitely Galaga. It was my introduction to the bullet hell style shooting games like Raiden, and letting your ship get taken so you could reclaim it for double ship firing action was pretty awesome too. Plus, I think it's now Xbox One compatible, so for those of you that haven't played it yet, you could get it on a modern system and have the same amount of fun as I had. Keep up the good work, Lou. All
right, now I gotta remember. I don't even remember the first fucking email.
Oh, man, we have a fucking ton of them.
Well, let's just get the first one out of the way. The memories of playing Pac-Man while visiting mom at the laundromat. Like,
The thing is, we have three Pac-Man entries.
I know, but if we're gonna say, oh, you know, well, there's too many Pac-Man. No, I'm going with the best story. You now have memories of loving memories of your mother because of Pac-Man. That's sweet.
All right, we'll do one for Cole. You win a copy of Qbert. Let's see. I want to do one to Road Blasters because I fucking love that game.
Yeah, I was gonna say like that one that. And that was a cool story, too, you know, with the whole people being around and everything. Now comes the tough part.
The tough one. We have one final code between Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, Terminator 2, Turtles in Time, Pac-Man and Pizza, X-Men the Arcade Game, Marvel Super Heroes, Mortal Kombat, Alex Kidd, and Galaga.
Oh, fuck. I mean, do we really want to just make it easier on ourselves and eliminate the Terminator 2 and Marvel and
Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat, yeah.
It makes sense, though. Those aren't really too retro.
They were all post 90.
I think I would even toss Ninja Turtles in there as well.
Yeah, Ninja Turtles I think was 90. Well, yeah, let's just, I mean, and not to be a total dick, but we're being kind of dicks, but let's make life easier. We asked for retro. So we can kind of just say, okay, those very well may have been retro for you, dear listener. And for that, that's awesome. Congratulations. You'll probably outlive me and Joe. But
true.
We're running the show, so we get to decide what's retro, goddammit.
Yeah, so we are down to Pac-Man spending allowance, Donkey Kong, Pac-Man Pizza Place, Alex Kidd, and Galaga. And
kind of like the
Pac-Man
Pizza Place thing, though, the whole... Like, you know, looked forward to it every week, and then the place shut down after they got rid of the arcade. You know, I don't know. What about you?
I want a refresher on the Donkey Kong story real quick.
All right. Yeah, that's by all means.
Just because there's so many. First game I ever played got me into gaming. Classic characters, yada, yada, yada. Nasty blisters on the hands.
Oh, yeah, no, that's right.
And recommending the movie. So recommending the movie and physical harm. We're fans of physical harm here.
Yeah, and we both remember the blisters you got from actually wanting to play video games back in the day.
Yeah, so I think our three winners are Eric Trill with Road Blasters, Michael Reyes with Donkey Kong, and Cole with... losing your mother and remembering Pac-Man.
The phrasing is terrible. And Cole, condolences. Here's a code.
You may have lost your mother, but you'll have Qbert forever until the server shut down.
Okay.
So, congrats to you three. Our apologies to the other 14 of you, but unfortunately, we only had three codes to give away. That's the downside with doing this show is you can only do so much sometimes.
But hey, Lou, if you guys are listening right now, it sounds like there's a whole lot of interest for your game.
For Qbert. So yeah, David, the Rodfather, congrats. A lot of people like Qbert. next contest we have, because we've only been doing this 20 minutes and covered one contest, the beautiful folks at Vector Unit have hooked us up with another three codes for the game Riptide GP 2.
All right, so this one's a little easier. 3 codes for 7 entries.
So that's better.
Drew, a.k.a. Homie Drew. Hello, I saw your tweet earlier in regards to a Riptide GP 2 Xbox code. If any are left, I would love one. Game looks awesome and been wanting to play it for a while. What was our request for this one?
Tell us why you wanted it.
All right.
I mean, technically qualifies. Saw our tweet. Yes. Think the game looks cool. Wants it.
I feel like I lucked out, though, because I get very short ones. Daniel N., one of my favorite racing games was Wave Race 64, and Riptide GP2's gameplay and style looks to carry on the tradition. That's it.
That was a fucking long email.
I know. Snuffbox Not Telling. 4 sentences here. Jesus.
Wait, what's that name?
Snuffbox Not Telling.
That's amazing.
I want to win Riptide GT because 1,000 gamer score. Like, seriously, that's it. So I think they meant that's it. Game seems cool, but I only give a shit about the gamer score. Also, have Shizblaka on more often. He's fucking hilarious. Good podcast.
Well, thank you for enjoying our podcast, but
that's just Shizblaka
guy. That's not a good way to win a game from us.
Well, straight honesty. Like I said,
true.
I really like it.
I appreciate the honesty, but saying you don't give a shit about the game, you just want the gamer score.
No, he said game seems cool.
Yeah, true.
I'll be honest.
Gotta appreciate the honesty, though. I do appreciate the honesty. That Shizblaka guy's a shithead, though. Fuck that dude. I hear he's terrible at games.
Jeff, a.k.a. Jean-Francois Geigel. My tablet is heating when I play this game, so that would be awesome to have a chance to play it on Xbox One. And he ends with a question. Do you think we'll ever get Riptide from Skylanders as a driver in Riptide GP2? Smiley face. I've never played Skylanders, so I'm not really sure what a Riptide is.
I don't remember any of the characters anymore, but just the fact that there's a character named Riptide and they want him in Riptide. I appreciate that joke.
All right. And we got Jon Snow.
Hey, John.
Hi, guys. I would love to win Riptide GP2 from you all because it brings back so many nostalgic memories of Wave Race. I didn't even know about this game until I was listening to your podcast, and after a bit of research, I am digging the way the game looks. Please pick me. Thanks again.
Nice.
I do feel like John has been close to winning a couple of times and didn't. So.
I don't remember. That's the hard part about doing so many giveaways is I don't remember who all has entered and who all has won. So he may have won like a dozen games for all I remember, or he may be batting a zero.
We don't know.
I'm too stupid to remember. I could have written all this stuff down and kept track of all this and like have statistics and percentages. And listen, people, we're recording in our episode before our interview and pretending that we're doing it after the interview because of laziness.
And because our interview is at midnight my time.
Yeah, 3 a.m.
So anyhow, Nathan Ashton writes in, good evening, sirs. Well, right there, you got it wrong. But I appreciate you being so nice to us. Anyhow.
We're assholes.
Why do I want this game code? I am a huge, capital huge, fan of these types of racers. I would spend hours and hours along with my hard-earned paper route money back in the day in arcades playing arcade machines similar to Riptide, most related to Hydro Thunder in a way I guess you could compare them. Biggest fan of racing games of many types on many systems. The rush I get from playing them is fantastic. Thank you for your time. Keep those awesome podcasts coming too. And then the email ends with fuck off.
But oh, that Joe was actually wrote that. That's what so, I sent to you. Hey, Pappy. Hey, Pappy. Yeah. Fuck off.
And one more. Lou Poole. Riptide GP makes me think back to the days of Jet Moto on the PlayStation. And since I don't have a PS1 anymore and I don't want to touch any other PlayStations after I hear all of your problems, I'd love to get my jet ski action on in style on Xbox. So let's just go right ahead and give Lou code because he hit the Joe Cam funny bone there with the whole, I don't want to touch a PlayStation. I hear stories.
I feel your pain, Lou.
What do you think, pain. Lou Poole, just right then and there?
It sounds here good to go. Me. Let's see. We have Drew who saw the tweet.
Yep.
Daniel, who was a Wave Race fan.
Yep.
Snuffbox, who just wants the gamer score. I think Jean-Francois, who has a hot lap from their tablet burning up over the game and would like a less painful way to play. Yeah.
Jon Snow, who does remember Wave Race.
And looked up Riptide because of us.
Yeah.
And then Nathan, who is a huge fan of the games and wants to not have to spend allowance to play.
I kind of... Now, what do you think? Lou, though? Like, Lou just 1-1?
I think so. After an answer like that, you kind of have to...
And I think Nathan Ashen gave us the most comprehensive answer, and he's obviously been playing racing games for a long time. So I kind of want to reward that. Because, I mean, he was using fucking Paperboy money.
Yeah. Part of me, like, in my eyes, the last three entries come down to Wave Race, and a burning tablet. And I think the two Wave Races are going to cancel out, and I think the Jean-Francois... gets it with the tablet. Well, and
I'm sorry, Jon Snow, but we've disappointed you. Maybe once again.
He knows nothing.
Yeah. But keep sending in those emails, man. It's zero effort, and you get the potential to win free stuff.
One day, dude, unless you already did and we forgot, which is incredibly likely. All right, we have one more contest to go through, Breath of Fire 3, which, by the way, I might as well cover my quickie review of this game because we have the game to cover on our show as normal. It is developed and published by Capcom, released February 9th for $9.99 as a digital download on the PSP, but... being it's a PSP title, it is also compatible digitally with the PlayStation Vita and the PSTV. So if you have one of those dust collectors sitting around, you could do something with it. It's hard to review such an old game because I should have looked up what year the PSP version originally came out. The PSP version originally came out, I want to say, like mid-2000s. And it released in Japan, and it got translated into English and released in Europe. But it
2006.
Never... 2006. Hey, I was pretty goddamn close. It never came to America. So a lot of people, myself included, imported the game and played it that way. And unfortunately, you know, if you no longer have a working PSP or you can't find the goddamn thing anymore, you can't really play it. Especially with the whole, you know, you can't put a PSP game into a Vita. So it is awesome that Capcom has finally released it in America as a digital download and that it's compatible with the Vita and the PSTV. It is a port of the PS1 game. Not too much has changed overall. It's still the same fantastic RPG. And if you're a fan of the series, it's only $10. And I think
I was going to say, I mean, that's smart. You know, it was a $60 game probably 10 years ago.
You've got computer access without the risk of destroying a recording. How much is Breath of Fire 3 going for online? Because I
PSP?
Think either that or even the PlayStation 1 version, because I know it's not a cheap game to track down. The
$40 for PSP, $91 for the PlayStation.
There you go. And I know that the PS1 version is also available as a digital download on the PlayStation store, but I think the PSP version was just an overall better release.
Yeah, so. That now you pretty much, if you wanted to buy it, yeah, Play Asia is legit like $90, but then, you know, our eBays are $20 to $30. But again, that's eBay. So you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah. Oh, man. But yeah, I give that an easy buy it recommendation.
Belch buy it.
A belch it. Let's see. We have, there's still another handful of codes here. A handful of emails. We once again have three codes to give away. And I am writing down names quick so this can go quicker during the actual reading. Because I do all this shit by hand and I write notes down for everything. How do you like that?
Silly bastard.
We asked you people, you horrible, horrible people, to send us an email at thesmlpodcast@gmail.com and tell us what your favorite game in the Breath of Fire series is and why. Sounds easy enough, right? There's 5 games to pick from, including the one we're giving away. So let's dive in. Charlie Huang writes in once again. Personally, like Breath of Fire 3 the best. Such a great story, great character customization, cool multiple abilities, the awesome dragon system, a camera that cooperates with you, fluid art and animation, and none of that boring grinding to level up.
Holy shit, really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I still like to grind, but...
That makes one of us on this show.
Grind up that ass. Shit. Next email is from Corey Carlson. I absolutely adore the first game in the series, even though it seems to be many's least favorite. Maybe my love comes from playing it when it first released, and at that time, every single RPG released on consoles was a treasure. It's so interesting that of all people, and considering the amount of games of their own that they could have localized, Squaresoft chose one that wasn't even theirs. Don't get me started on the soundtrack, though. One of the best overworld themes ever, the underwater music, Tunlan... So many good ones. I've played through this one several times at this point. A rarity when it comes to RPGs.
Yeah, yeah. I beat one RPG in my entire life, and I only got back like halfway through on the second try.
Yeah, it is cool, though, that of all the games that Squaresoft released in America, they chose a Capcom game. Go figure.
I feel like that says something about Squaresoft at that point, but let's move on.
Well, no, that's when Squaresoft was amazing, and we're constantly cranking out amazing games. So, let's see. Daniel N. with another entry says, favorite Breath of Fire game would have to be the first one I ever played, Breath of Fire on the good old SNES. I love the anime-style artwork and post-apocalyptic themes with an increased emphasis on how the character developed through the course of the game.
Ooh, character development in an RPG?
Indeed. I have no idea how to, like, write notes for these on my little tiny post-it note. next email is from Uneaten Lake. Long time no see, Lake. We miss you. Write to us. He says, I've never played Breath of Fire series, so I can't comment on which is my favorite. But if I won the game, it'd give me an excuse to buy a Vita so I could play Breath of Fire 3. Don't you guys want to be able to say that not only do people buy games because of our recommendations, but they also buy hardware as well? Then Breath of Fire 3 would totally be my favorite Breath of Fire game.
Well, I like that we can now say we've influenced people on what not to buy.
That's a good reason, though, to buy a Vita.
Well, we will give you a free code to a $10 game, but only if you buy...
A $200 system. next email from Brad Hall, Variable Rush. Hey, what's up, dude? My favorite Breath of Fire game is the second one, though it could have been the third. I've never played any of them, but they looked cool. Brad Hall. I'll just write that down as... 2 or 3 or none.
I appreciate the honesty.
Thanks for the email. Next email is from Eileen Co. My favorite Breath of Fire game is the first, primarily due to nostalgia. You always remember your first, after all. I remember spending hours at a time in front of the Super Nintendo playing through it. I accidentally named my character Dran because I tried to type in Dragon. Yes, I am forever differently creative when it comes to naming anything, without realizing there was a 4-character limit, and my brothers poked fun of me. So, Breath of Fire 1,
Dran.
I like that entry. Hey, we've all done shit like that. You never pay attention. Final contest entry. Joe Stratman. Henry Jones, how are you doing, sir? Hi, SML Podcast. I am entering the Breath of Fire 3 contest, and I would say that my favorite Breath of Fire game is 2. He actually says Breath of Fire games is 2, but Breath of Fire 2 is this mishmash of bizarre humor, gross-out moments, and some profound and sad moments, surprisingly enough. One of the best parts is how Nintendo's censorship department was completely asleep at the wheel for this game. In the first quarter, you have to find a witch who eventually turns up at a bar blackout drunk next to the bathroom, and she accidentally dropped the item you need while vomiting into the toilet, so you have to jump in after it, train spotting style. Half the toilets in this game seem to serve a plot function. Oh, God. The woman in charge of the game's Unity systems is literally trying to seduce you into combining with her. That's not to mention the entire plot is about a Western-style religion taking control of the world way before it became the plot to half the JRPGs for a while, and it has a point to doing so, which I'll get to in a second. I'm not going to say it isn't a mess. The first half is an extremely wacky adventure about finding disgusting ingredients for a cooking contest ran by frogs, taking orders from two dolphins to kill a doll swallowed by a whale, and getting a therapy pillow for a tree. When the second half gets real, it gets real. Going as far as to suggest almost everyone you knew and loved in the town you grew up in was either murdered or turned evil by the villain. It becomes heartbreaking in ways I didn't know a game could be, and since it was so late in the SNES era, I played all the major RPGs on Nintendo and Sega consoles. It's hard to consolidate the two halves, especially when they're doing their things at the same time, but it's still a hell of a ride. I have taken three times, once documented on my Miiverse game journal, where I mostly poke lovingly at its terrible translation. I hesitate to mention the religious stuff because, obviously, it's a very volatile subject and one that shouldn't be broached lightly on a podcast that often discusses fleshlights.
Oh, you listen.
God damn it. Believe what you want as long as it doesn't hurt yourself or others, but Breath of Fire 2 has the underlining point that if you get into a religion just because you want the presiding force to give you worldly things, it's an empty goal that will leave you an empty and twisted person. Maybe it's because at the time I was playing the Game Boy Advance port, I crossed paths with a reprehensible woman who renounced her religion after God didn't give her a boyfriend, but that resonated with me in a way other JRPGs that make God the villain because it's the easiest thing to do to make a huge threat didn't. Enough of that. It's a fever dream that turns into a bad acid trip. Has great graphics, music solid, a bunch of intangibles that always made it seem just a bit better than many of its peers. It's like Illusion of Gaia in that it's one of those imperfect Super Nintendo games that have stayed with me way longer than I expected it to, and it's my favorite Breath of Fire game. Joe Henry Jones Stratman. Well, he gets one for that fucking.
Yeah. Well, he actually made me want to go and try the damn game out. So, yeah.
That is a fucking detailed answer. Yeah. Holy shit.
He wasn't fucking around.
All right. So we have Dran with Breath of Fire 1. We have Brad, who is two or three or none of them. He doesn't know. Uneaten Lake, who's never played any, but will use this as a reason to buy a Vita.
I kind of want to give it to Lake just so he goes out and buys a Vita.
Dan N., who liked the first one because of the anime style. Corey, who likes the first one because of the music. And Charlie, who likes the third one for a variety of reasons. I kind of want to give one to Charlie because if he's a fan of the third one and wants to get the third one, it kind of makes sense to get the third one, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
let's... What's to, Henry, Lake, and...
You want to give it to Lake?
Yeah.
Alrighty.
I honestly think that's relatively humorous. You know, hey, I really want to play them, but I don't have a Vita. Give me the code and I'll buy one.
All right. So congrats to Uneaten Lake. You better buy a fucking Vita. Congrats to Henry Jones, and congrats to Charlie Huang. And congrats again to everybody who sent us a ridiculous number of contest entries for the very few game codes that we did have. Apologies again to everyone who didn't win. Normally, I send out, like, emails to everyone saying, sorry, you didn't win. Oh, there's a lot of fucking emails, so I don't think I'm going to send them.
I'll tell you.
Except to the winners, because you guys are winners, and I have to send you a code.
I still think you should send them, like, do a quick copy-paste. Hey, thanks for writing in. Really sorry, you know, that unfortunately your email did not win.
Unfortunately, you're a fucking loser.
It could, Honestly, I still like this better than the early days when we had 7 codes and we were just handing them out like, here, oh, you wrote us in for anything. Here, have a code. Now it's like, oh, fuck, guys. Like, you're making us think.
True. Very true.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you all.
Very true. So since we covered one review, we gave Breath of Fire 3, the game we just gave away, a solid buy it recommendation. So for the others of you who didn't win the game, go buy it. Let's move on with two other reviews that we got to take care of. First one, I got to go turn a cat toy off, so I'm going to let you talk about Kona Day One for a little bit. Developed and published by Parable, released in early access on GOG February 9th for $11.99, but it is on sale for $7.99. So start a talking while I don't pay attention.
So it's the tables have turned now. Kona, Day One. It's a very interesting game in that, hey, you're a detective, you were hired to go do a thing up in Canada. And that's it. It's straight up, do your thing, figure it out. Like, it starts you off in front of a picnic table. And you've got stuff on the table to pick up. As you pick it up, it tells you what it does and how to use it.
Very interesting. Very, very interesting.
No, seriously, like, you get in your truck and you drive. Like, that's it. Once you get to the general store, the game just says, fuck you, you're on your own.
Oh, shit.
I spent half an hour trying to figure out how to turn on a garage door light.
To be fair, that's not too different from your normal life.
No, but I mean, in this one, there's a note on the power box in the general store saying that you can only have the general store light on or the garage light on. You can't have them on at the same time. So you kind of have to figure out how to operate the power box and the switch. And then I went out in the woods and I touched a rock and I got sucked into the spirit dimension. And I spent like 20 minutes trying to figure out how the fuck to get out of the spirit direct dimension because you can't drive your truck when you're a ghost. So that's the game is very much a creepy mystery up in Canada. The only thing I say that sucked, like legitimately sucked, was driving with the WASD keys.
Is there no controller support?
I didn't try because I had a little bit of lag. But because of my issue with Firewatch, I was kind of a little scared. So I just went right with the keyboard. And so I'm like gently tapping A to maneuver left and stay on the road. And my guy's like, oh, you want to go fucking go 90 degrees? All right. Tree. So it took me about 10 minutes real time to drive what's probably the equivalent of like a mile in the game.
I'm thinking you should give it another go with a controller and check back in with us next week.
No, that's just the driving. The rest of the game was phenomenal.
Just give us an update on the driving at least.
Oh, the driving, yeah. Go back to driving simulator, the controller. The game is gorgeous. The mystery is really cool. You're supposed to meet somebody and they're not there. And that's it. Like, what do
I
do next?
Every date I've ever been on.
Oh. But no, it's... I just love the ambiance. I loved the mystery of it. The only thing that I'd call a bummer is for slower gamers like myself, you have no idea what you're supposed to do next. There is nothing. Hey, this guy's supposed to meet me and he's not here. Maybe I should go looking for him. And you're in the fucking middle of the woods in Canada. Like, you can go anywhere immediately. I can hop back in the truck and drive everywhere. But there's nothing marked on my map telling me where to go next. So I say right now it's definitely a try it. Again, it's not the completed game isn't out yet.
Yeah, it's still early access. I know.
And there's still some bugs. Like, it even tells you when you open the game, this is a beta. There's still bugs and issues. But I'd say if you're interested in a mysterious open world kind of game, definitely grab it up. You said what, $8 right now on sale?
Our full price is $11.99, but it is on sale right now for $7.99. I don't know how long that sale is going to last. Does the price make a big difference in your eyes?
I'd say no matter if it was 10 cents or 50 bucks, if you're not a fan of open world mysteries, you wouldn't be a fan of this anyway.
Right.
But if you do like poking around and figuring shit out for yourself, like hell, the very first first aid kit, it's hidden behind a ladder you have to move. Like, if you had just walked by, done. You have no first aid kit. You have to touch things, explore things, poke around. So if that's your kind of game, like if you like the old Myst style of just, hey, here's an island, have fun. I think you're going to enjoy this game. So, yeah, it's either a try it or buy it, depending on how you feel about the genre.
Yeah, I'd say if you're a fan of the genre, you might want to even pick it up now instead of waiting, because everyone knows early access games eventually go up in price anyway. So,
yeah, and it's not going to hurt. And like I said, if you play the game a little bit, hell, honestly, if you watch some trailers and some gameplay, you'll know if it's for you. And if it's for you, get it. Just it's definitely, I really think it's going to be one of those better games in the genre.
Nice. Good to hear. So sounds like Parable did a good job with that, with a solid buy slash try, depending on your game preferential thingy mabobs.
The one thing that was funny, though, is when you pick everything up, it is in French, because you're up, you're in Canada, way up there. So you have to actually click the read button to get the English translation overlaid on the French.
That's funny. Das funny. All right, one more game to discuss is, I'm going to butcher the title of this, Mitsurugi Kamui Hikei?
Kamui, I think.
Kamui Hikei. It is developed and published by Zenith Blue. It releases on the 16th, so it should be out by the time you're listening to this, for $9.99. I know it's on the Xbox One. I believe it's on the PS4 as well. I don't see why it wouldn't be, because it's a fucking Japanese game, and those are always on PlayStation.
It's more surprising when they come out on non-PlayStations.
Yeah. The game is pretty much an arena hack-and-slash game. There's a story to it about, like, your friend is, like, evil now or something. I don't. It's a Japanese schoolgirl thing.
No, it's a typical Japanese high school. Your friend is evil, possessed, possibly possessed by a demon.
Yeah, and you have to, I guess, fix everything. So the game starts.
You fix have, everything with your sword.
Pretty much. The game starts. You have a sword. You hack and slash your way through wave upon wave upon wave upon wave upon wave of enemies. And
how many
as
waves?
The first round, or the first stage, because I made the mistake of playing on hard right off the bat, because I'm stupid. Go figure. I figured for a quick $10 game, it couldn't be that hard. How stupid I am. I believe there were five waves of enemies and then a boss, which the boss wrecked my shit multiple times. It has, you know, it has normal fist fighting attacks. There's katana attacks, but you have a gauge that goes down as you use the sword, and doing the punching attacks refills it. There's special attacks that you can either charge up and use, or you could hold the button and then hit one of the triggers or the bumpers, and it pretty much charges it up immediately, but at the cost of some of your katana bar.
Okay.
You earn points as you kill enemies, and you can go back and upgrade your character, upgrade yourself. You can unlock costumes. It's just cool. It's not a super deep game, but it's fun enough to keep you going through it, through wave after wave after wave of enemies to get to the end. And it's very liberal with achievements as well. I mean, not point wise, but I've earned a massive handful just playing through the game. It's like, you killed people. Here's an achievement. You used an attack. Here's some achievements. It's a really cool game. $10 seems like a kind of a sweet spot to pick it up, but not. It all comes down to if you're into hack and slash games. I'd say if you're a fan of like Dynasty Warriors games, because that's pretty much just nonstop hack and slash. You just don't have to run around maps. It's just a big arena. So give it a try. Check it out. Watch some previews of it. I think it's fun. I think it's a cool game. Not everyone will, obviously, but our official stance, I would say, is a try it. A solid try it.
No, that's not bad. Yeah, if it's really easy. You like hack and slash? Yes? No? Okay. That's it.
That's the glory of our review system, is that a lot of it comes down to personal preference. And if you like the genre we're talking about, it's clearly a buy it. If you don't like the genre we're talking about, you just wasted time listening to us.
Yeah, and the only thing is, it does get a little redundant then, right?
So, yeah, because
that's hack and slash.
It's not a huge game. It's only a $10. Like, if this is a $50 game, I'd be like, what the fuck? It's a $10 game. So I can't expect super deep involving gameplay. I'm just happy that we're getting a Japanese game on the Xbox One. Can we just be thankful about that?
It's rare that you're going to find a cheap game that's super deep. Like, I mean, I think D4 is still my pinnacle of relatively cheap game that's, holy shit, this is ridiculous.
Well, it comes down to the game, is like the style of game as well, because a platformer could be more deep and involving than an arena hack and slash game.
Or you can just get Electronic Super Joy and be angry forever.
Or you could get The Walking Dead and get cursed at by Shiz.
Yeah, for not playing Rock, Paper, Scissors.
Yeah. You fucking pussy.
Fuck me, right?
You fucking piece of shit. How don't you have 100%, you fucking loser?
That's the part that cracked me up. It's because I never played the DLC. Like, I 100%ed it when it came out, and then you had the 500 days, which I never played. So it kind of bounced back on and was like, well, you didn't 100% it because you never played 500 days or something.
Whatever it is.
I was like, holy shit, man.
Oh, man. We could tackle a little bit of news. I know Rock Band has some new DLC out now. There's a newer Motorhead song, which is cool. Cool tribute to Lemmy. Rip in peace and shit like that. There's a Five Finger Death Punch song, which I...
Which one?
What the fuck was the name of it? Let me turn my controller on. I'm like one screen up from where the songs are. Got Your Six, so it's one of the new songs.
Okay.
Which is just, you know, whatever. And then
I like some Five Finger Death Punch. And I when I tried to search it, I type in Rock Banad. The NAD
rock
does not
banad.
Come up with anything. Yeah, Rock Banad.
You're a dickhead. I know if Chris were on, he would be, like, so pissed that we're even mentioning it on our show. Because he fucking hates Five Finger Death Punch.
There's, I went to a live, one of those big festivals, you know, where it was, like, fucking 18 bands in three stages. And one of my buddies, he's the one who actually had us go, because he's like, yeah, Five Finger Death Punch is going to be there, and I love him. And this was almost a decade ago. So I never heard of them before, and I heard them, and I was like, yeah, that's not bad. I have all their albums. I definitely don't love every song, but there's enough out there that I enjoy.
Well, apparently Chris almost got into a fist fight with the singer. So,
yeah, I mean, when you have a personal anecdote like that, it's hard to overlook, you know, the personality.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's bands I don't listen to because I don't really care for their lead singer's personality, so I understand.
Yeah, the band itself doesn't have the most shining of a reputation anymore. I've heard them referred to many a times as the Nickelback of metal.
Well, what I will say is, and I get, you know, personal bias, but they are huge supporters of the military. You know, they even have that one song that's, you know, pretty much, they have more than one song that's a pro-military anthem stuff. You know, and that one, I don't know why I'm brain farting on the name of it, but there's one song that specifically addresses kind of how a lot of people suffer from PTSD and are forgotten by the system afterwards. So I give them a lot of credit for that, just even bringing that up in their music.
The problem is we're not talking about the song that really matters this week, which is Figure It Out from Royal Blood. Which is amazing that Royal Blood is finally in Rock Band. I'm sad it's not like a 40 pack, but
I'm just sad that Royal Blood made it and Fuel hasn't. You know, that's just
I think Royal Blood is significantly bigger now than
funny.
Fuel
Royal
has
Blood
ever been.
So here's the thing, though. Royal Blood, remember, Fuel won a Grammy for Best New Artist. Back when we were in high school.
We are motherfucking old.
But yeah, Royal Blood is awesome. And I'm curious to check out the track because it's a two-piece band.
Yeah, it's good stuff, too. It looked like the preview in the Rock Band trailer had basically identical charts on guitar and bass. Okay. I know Dream Genie from Lightning Bolt is
fuck that song.
Well, that's also a two-piece, and there's a lot of parts where they'll split like some of the guitar sounding stuff and chart it on guitar while leaving some of the rest of it on bass.
I'll say they're still a three-piece band because Acid has a huge influence on that shit.
Yeah, I'm excited to play the chart. I was gonna play it before we recorded, but yeah, we recorded
Thank God we recorded this.
Clearly at 3 o'clock. It's clearly like 5 a.m. right now based on everything we've been doing.
And we had to do everything twice at 3 in the morning because Joe's computer's a dick.
I mean, just once.
Yeah, 7 times. No.
Something I wish Chris was here for is there's rumors coming out. An image, a store listing popped up on JB Hi-Fi's website in Australia, and it was quickly taken down, but of course everything lives on the internet, that allegedly over the summer in August, Skate 4 is going to release.
Yeah, Chris wouldn't care about that at all. He'd be like, why are you wasting my time? Why aren't you putting me into a cryopod so I can sleep till August?
Pretty much. It also mentions, like, on the case art that leaked, is that an Xbox One exclusive, it includes Skate 3 as backward compatible title, which that's been confirmed as a title, so that helps a little bit with whether or not it's real. Just a rumor, figured we'd mention it because Chris goes nuts for the skate games. I think it'd be cool to see.
Chris isn't on our show because he's currently masturbating furiously
to the news of a potential Skate 4. Oh, poor Chris. last bit of news I guess we could talk about is Chronicles of Time has finally released. The full Chronicles of Time, all 5 discs, all 94 hours of music.
Any musician Joe and I have ever talked to personally has worked on this?
Pretty much. I know Dale's on it. Kunal's on it.
Chris is on it.
Yeah, he's in the first song, and I figure that leads into a great selection of music for the week, as we'll play a couple of tracks off of Chronicles of Time. I don't have the website off the top of my head, but check the description, and you could buy it on iTunes right now. It's $20 for the whole 5 album release, 5 disc album release.
Yeah, let's see.
It's massive.
Stemage, Carbo, Hydro M, Alexander Brandon, Dale North, William Reyes, Tim Yarbrough, Arc Impulse, Super Soul Brothers, Fideri String Quartet, Descendants of Edric, 8-Bit Disaster, Super Guitar Brothers, Martial Art, and many more. There's like, and many more.
Snapple Man, Norg, our buddy Norg, the voice of SML, is on there.
Shout out to the guy who helped put it together, Nate Horsfall.
Indeed. Who is with your wife, your ex-wife.
Okay. Okay, I just put up the list. It would take 10 more minutes to run through all these people. Jesus.
Kind of like how he runs through your ex-wife.
All right, we're done here.
All right, so Pappy, any final words?
Yeah, fuck you.
How about any final words for your ex-wife?
I gotta see them both in like 70 hours.
Yeah, that's gonna be fun. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.